It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
All eyes continue to be on election 2020. It's a race that we said from the moment one when we started talking about this race is that it would be a historical race and it would be one that we would never forget anytime soon. And boy, did we short sell that, I think, huh? It is quite something what we're seeing here. It reminds me back to number 40, Ronald Reagan. And I actually want to start today's program with you and an important message he said in one of his historic speeches, and it went like this. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We will preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we will sentence them to take the first step into 1,000 years of darkness. If we fail, at least let our children and our children's children say of us, we justified our brief moment here. We did all that could be done. And that was number 40, Ronald Reagan. The words should speak to you because they tell a story right now. Are we doing all that we can do? You know, when it came to the founding of our great nation and the Constitution, as we were talking about earlier and I've discussed, it really was the 3%, the minority part of the country. It was those people who really stood tall for liberty. Well, it's just like the people who fight in our militaries now and others. There are always those few Americans, those patriots who will do whatever has got to be done. They will rise to any challenge. They will step on anything in order to ensure that liberty thrives in our future generations. And that's where we are right this very moment. It's why I point that out to you. This election, there are some very fascinating things to talk about. And we're going to do that next. And I want to welcome you to Viewpoint Presents. This is Malcolm along with Michael Johns. I've been questioning, well, I mean, what is the will of the American people? I mean, if the will of the American people was a Biden presidency, then that's it. And we will go with that. But if it's not the will of the American people, then we need to rail against that. And that really is the undertow to me of this complete argument that we're having about this race, Michael, is that, you know, what I don't want to see is the right, which constantly and consistently they acquiesce to the left, and they give the left whatever they want, and the left knows that. And the way this race has played out has kind of played to that narrative, I think, and I'm worried about that right now. But at the same time, I think like you, you've probably questioned it as well. What's really real here? There's a lot of smoke and mirrors, in other words, and was this really real? I mean, did Biden win this fair and square? So if I ask you right out, before I get into some of the stats, if I ask you right out, did Biden win this fair and square? And should this be a contested election? What would you say?
I would say all evidence at this point, at this moment, present tense, points to the facts that there was fairly systematic fraud in this election, that it was coordinated, and that it's also importantly, which we're not talking enough about, suggestive of the fact that when you have coordinated fraud in certain areas, there's the very strong possibility of coordinated fraud in other areas that we haven't uncovered yet. So I think when you look at this from a whole broad range of the fraudulent components, what emerges in my eyes is that Trump was performing better than expected, particularly in Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, Pennsylvania. They got very anxious about that and went to some fairly extreme measures to ensure that those states were not captured by Trump. So all of this points to some very, I think, systematic structural deficiencies in our electoral process. Number one of which is the fact that we continue to have people voting without any identification. We continue to have voting rolls that aren't purged of people who are deceased or removed from the state. Now, I believe increasingly we have concerns even about the integrity and security of the electoral systems that are used to count these votes, which is actually, in my judgment, the most frightening of all these revelations.
Yeah. The key to what you say, you're right, was there, and we all have to ask ourselves that question, was there widespread voter fraud? That is the ultimate question, because as you and I've said, and what I've been saying in past days, on the platform, on our network, is that, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this is not going to cut it. The key is widespread fraud now.
Right. And you can see the way the media and social media particularly have been structuring this, meaning that, you know, until you actually, you know, capture the criminal, produce them and provide the evidence, well, then everything was free. Then there was no, you know, there was no crime committed. What we're showing are various structural components of crime, you know, from denying poll watchers access that they're guaranteed under law to have in Philadelphia, Detroit, and elsewhere, to systematic, what they call glitches, but seem to be suggestive of a broader technical problem, all associated with just one particular company, none of the other companies that manufactured this electoral vote counting system, all affiliated with battleground states, no issues apparently in any of the other states, and all of which conveniently broke exclusively in the direction of Biden. And then just abundant issues as it relates to, as you and I talked about for a long time, the mail-in ballots and the fact that, you know, procedurally and process-wise, there just seemed to be an extraordinary number of votes counted here that were not, you know, in Nevada, for instance, you know, over 3,000 already identified of individuals that were not even residents of the state when they cast that ballot.
Yeah, you were speaking of the Dominion machine there, the voting system, right? Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, here's what's interesting about Dominion is that I think everyone who's at least following this closely is now aware of Dominion's so-called glitches. What has been sort of what I've been addressing over the last 24 hours is the fact that they also have a subsidiary, a company called Smartmatic, that was utilized in the fraudulent Venezuelan elections that really led to ultimately Chavez and Maduro both being declared, you know, not legitimate leaders of those countries. They've been involved in fraud around the world with this system. So they have a very direct link to a subsidiary that has been used to manipulate votes that's beyond any dispute. And in fact, Texas, to its credit, was asked to purchase this system, looked at it and said it was wholly a deficient system, prone to fraud and cyber related manipulation, and chose not to do it. Sadly, Michigan and a whole bunch of other critical states ended up acquiring it. They have about a third market share in the country, and there's nothing but issues now, I think, as it relates to that. The legal team of Trump is suggesting that, you know, this, and I believe this really has to be looked at incredibly thoroughly. And yet I don't see any current legal action on this, which is troubling because the clock's ticking.
Yeah. Well, every hour that does go by every day, yes. But we are all wondering at this point when the other shoe drops. And I think everybody is expecting or anticipating President Trump. And when we talk about the establishment and this full-on assault that's happening here, I would say to you in my investigations, Michael, and all the research I've looked at and all the data points coming into the election and things we talked about leading up to November 3rd, I will say this in a very declarative way, and I really mean this. I do not think it was possible for President Trump to have lost this race based on the data right. And the numbers coming into the 3rd of November. So President Trump had a 52% approval on election day and ended up winning 10 million more votes than during his first election. He shattered the record, in fact, indeed, for most votes received by a sitting president. Shattered the record, people. And listen to this. Not since President Grover Cleveland's reelection campaign in 1888 has a sitting president won more votes the second time around and still lost the race. And by the way, Michael, Barack Obama lost 5 million more votes between his 2008 and 2012 elections and still won. So What does that all say to you? What does that say?
Well, I mean, on the positive side, 72,626,112 votes by my count. As you correctly said, it's not just the most votes ever for Republican candidates, the most votes among minorities for any Republican presidential candidate. You can say from that, Trump, whether he ends up prevailing or not prevailing here, certainly put up credible numbers in this. This idea that he somehow is ostracizing African-Americans and Hispanic voters is complete rubbish. He's done better than any candidate to date on that constituency. Yeah. I guess if you were going to argue the other side, you have to also acknowledge, and we have to acknowledge to be intellectually honest about this, that the voter base has also increased substantially. So you could take the biggest Republican blowout in electoral history, and you know they would have fewer votes than Trump had in 2020. So part of this is just a product of a growing population.
72 million. I would argue back with you. Truthfully, I say this. I think it's more like 77. I think he got about, I'm going to guess 77, 78 million votes. Because I think a lot of those votes that were transitioned into the Biden column really belong with Trump. What do you say to that?
You're ballparking it. I see, just looking at Pennsylvania, 623,000 unlawful votes. If courts roll the right way, 320 unlawful in Michigan. These numbers do add up. And if there's systematic issues as it relates to electoral manipulation, and if the roughly 100,000 in Michigan that just were dropped off in the middle of the night, really, I think the most egregious example of the fraud we've seen to date, in a big bag where, individuals like literally just voted for Biden. They didn't just voted the top line, didn't vote any of the lower level ballots, no other races. That requires, we need answers on this. And I guess it just seems to be like a recurring theme of the last 4 years. We have these issues that emerge that are highly suggestive of high level fraud or criminality that we don't bring closure to. And you know who the ultimate victim is American democracy and America itself, because how many Americans who come out of this, regardless of the outcome, are going to look at it and say, yeah, but it was rigged, I mean, even if we're able to turn this around, is anyone who credibly voted for Biden going to really have confidence in this system at this point? And for our foreign adversaries who seek to undermine that principle, the core, which is the centerpiece of American greatness, what an incredible accomplishment to have us arguing among ourselves about whether the beacon of freedom in the world can conduct a free and fair presidential election with really, tens of millions of Americans saying absolutely not. I mean, I looked at this Rasmussen poll. This country's 50-50 on this too. Half this country does not believe this election was free and fair.
Yeah. I've been all over it, Michael. All week long, I've been talking about exactly that. To be the beacon of light around the globe would be a hard sell at the moment here, when we are certainly made a mockery out of the whole deal here at this point. Back to these points on this back and forth here, let me just get to this other couple of points here. If you look at Obama, George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, they all won re-election in recent modern times, even though they only had about 45% of the country that felt better off that when they were presidents, when they had begun, which here, 56% of voters felt better off with President Trump than when he had entered office. The others only had 45% historically, and they all won re-election, yet Trump doesn't win re-election. I mean, 6 in 10 Americans felt better off than when Barack Obama left office with Trump. I mean, it doesn't add up, does it?
Yeah, I think it doesn't. And it's almost a distraction at this point to get off of the fraud issue. I mean, I think there's a school of thought out there that says that there were components of Trump's demeanor or personality that made him. I mean, I was just looking at Ann Coulter giving a speech yesterday in Texas saying what the country wants is Trumpism without Trump. I don't believe that. I don't subscribe to that. I believe that the people who said they were alienated by his demeanor or by his tweets were people who weren't inclined to vote for him anyway. And the numbers that we're citing, even absent those that are going to be added as fraud is uncovered, suggest otherwise. They suggest this was an immensely and is an immensely popular president. He may have, in fact, intensified the opposition to him, but I don't think there was anyone out there who said, you know, I would have voted for Trump. He's clearly better on the economy. He has accomplished things. He's more competent. He's more capable. He's a better vision for the next 4 years. He's made himself more available to the electorate, but he sent that tweet back in 2017 or something that I didn't like, and therefore I'm not going to vote for. I just don't think that even singular person exists.
Ann Coulter is wrong, absolutely wrong. Listen, there was a 30% enthusiasm gap between Trump and Biden. 30% enthusiasm gap that was measured in that. I mean, that's significant. There was no enthusiasm, hence all of the rallies and the boat parades and the tractor trailers and the tractor content. I mean, there was everything. Everybody was out, you know, in some sort of parade or caravan of some sort across the nation. I mean, come on. I mean, the enthusiasm.
But we either have to say these polls are either, you know, accurate or inaccurate.
Right.
And I think what we are trying to represent is that this thing was set, and as we walked through it the last few weeks, Malcolm, you can just look at the series of events. First, out of nowhere, really, we were told, before we started warning about mail-in ballots, we were told there is nothing to fear. Never in the history of man has there ever been a fraudulent vote in American politics. I mean, some of the most outrageous, and they were always put out as articles, you know, as fact checks or debunking what we were saying. Of course, as you go through it, and I'm happy to give you example after example, there's nothing but history of fraud with mail-in ballots, and fraud has been a consistent theme in all elections in the history of man. Yeah. So we were kind of fed this proactive line that was again designed to do what? Ostracize those who would come out and say, you know, we might have concerns about a free and fair election, which is a pretty responsible position to take when you're having such a disproportionate number of mail-in ballots provided here. But they proactively put out that position, right? Then all of this media sort of aligned monolithically, including social media, where you couldn't even tweet questions or concrete examples even of it. Where you said, yeah, they say this, but, you know, here's examples, many of which I've cited, of individuals, some of whom are now incarcerated because of their role in electoral fraud. They shut down that debate completely. And then, you know, the election day comes, and what do we have? Just about every singular component of fraud that you could possibly utilize in an election, including some of the most glaring things, like, let me just give you the most prominent example a lot of people are talking about, denying poll watchers in Philadelphia to the point where not one mail-in ballot there was witnessed, as is required by law, by a Republican or Trump poll watcher. We don't hear any condemnation of that practice from any Democrat that I've seen to date. Joe Biden should be out in front saying this is absolutely unacceptable. Throw out those votes. I don't want those votes. Yeah. That would be what a diplomat, sure, what a leader would do. I don't
The videos of what you're speaking about are very striking. The videos that project that, you know, first when I started hearing those stories, I thought, oh, come on, how bad can that really be? I really wasn't, you know, but then when you see the actual footage and you see what really happened, it's pretty outrageous.
Well, it's also bad because I don't think people understand the mammoth amount of votes that were put into the Pennsylvania Convention Center in Center City, Philadelphia. Yeah. So I think they're thinking in terms of, well, this is one location, not maybe including a whole lot of votes. There were hundreds of thousands, maybe over a million votes that were calculated in that one location, and they very consciously kept poll watchers at bay. They did the same thing in Pittsburgh. They did the same thing in Detroit. These were proactive measures in swing states that they knew the president needed. You and I talked about how the fact that Pennsylvania was a key road to victory, how it was very difficult to envision a scenario where, absent those 20 electoral college votes in Pennsylvania, that Trump could still emerge victorious, that there were a few avenues but not 11. Right. I mean, you closed out Pennsylvania, it became very difficult. Now, if you close out Pennsylvania and Michigan, almost impossible.
That's right.
And yet, such an unbelievable level of focus in what I don't think anyone is denying were fraudulent, illegal practices. So yeah. Where is the universal bipartisan outrage? You know, good rally in D.C. By the way, I support these rallies completely. The American people should take to the streets responsibly, peacefully, no violence. But we have got to keep the pressure on over these next few weeks to make sure that there's no ambiguity, no lack of clarity in the fact that we need every vote that was cast freely, fairly, and accurately counted, and everyone that was cast under doubts of suspicion legally tossed out.
Do you remember the surveys that were being done and the stories that were being circulated? Again, this is all pre-election now, where they were asking people like, okay, like, and there was quite a few of these actually, who do you think your neighbors would vote for? Because there was this hidden Trump voter, remember that? Everybody, God, right. A secret Trump voter. What is that really?
I'm not voting for Trump, but those guys down the street.
Yeah. Right? And actually those numbers and those surveys, 10% more Americans, Michael, expected the president to be reelected than to lose. That's across the board. And can you believe that? I mean, so and then you ask, well, how would he lose then if 10% more expected him to win, that he was going to be reelected? And this is all, you know, anecdotal evidence that plays to the bigger narrative. 15% more voters pulled the lever for his reelection this time around than in 2016. And we're only at the tip of what we know. How many of those votes were transitioned with a widespread fraud? And the numbers are going to be higher than 72 million. I can tell you that much. And none of these numbers would indicate that he's a losing candidate when you look at all of these factors and momentum and all of that. But then you have the media and the pollsters who, you know, they have him 17 points upside down backwards, 10 points upside down backwards, 8 points upside down backwards, right. 12 and a half points upside down backwards. Well, there's no way this incumbent president is going to win, Michael. Come on, right?
And, so we've been through this a bunch of times now, obviously 2016. Let's really talk about why these polls matter. Why do we do them, for starters? I mean, I pointed out a lot of the deficiencies of them. For one, they are national popularity. They're national polls, but it's not a national election, right? I think by this point, hopefully anyone paying attention understands you need 270 electoral college votes, that the popular vote is interesting, but it's a statistic, you know, it's how many passing yards did a losing football team have in their loss? It's maybe worth looking at because it might be suggestive of something, but no one runs these campaigns, not Biden, not Trump, trying to win a popular vote. If that was the goal, you would have had Trump out in California. He would have been running ads in LA and
well,
San
wait
Francisco
a minute. Wait a minute. That's not true. That's not true. Hillary Clinton went that way. Right.
Well, right. But I'm saying even Hillary Clinton would have probably spent more time and resources in New York, Illinois.
My point is she didn't. She played to the popular vote. She lost that race. She didn't play in the states. Remember, that was my point. You know?
Well, I mean, yeah, she never got to, Wisconsin, Minnesota. She never spent any time in those. But those were the states she needed to win. And how incredible, isn't it, that she's now being looked upon as, for a potential high level position in this administration. That's not going to go over too well with the American people.
Interesting. What do you think of that? I think she could be in charge of custodian services on the front lawn or something.
I just think that the American people have so had it with these people who have been hanging around forever, who've done very little for them. I don't think name anything, but how is their life better because Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden's been around for half a century doing this stuff? So it's problematic. I'm not at that point intellectually where I am even contemplating that. I think that's a mistake for the American people to do at this point. We have got to focus in on making sure that on January 20, whoever takes the oath of office is doing it because they literally did win this electoral college vote count and are the legitimate president of the United States, because there's too much at stake. And I'm not even talking about policies, not even talking about politics. We can't have any lingering doubts about this. And by the way, maybe that means operating, you know, we're operating under some arbitrary deadlines here. I mean, what if getting to the bottom of this Dominion and Smartmatic thing takes longer than that? What do we do?
That's a great, hold that thought right there. That is a great subset to get to where we want to get to as we pause here with you here. I was thinking the same thing that Michael puts out there. So what would happen if we needed more time at this historic moment and the evidence started to point a specific way? And as you said earlier, every hour that ticks by is an important hour. So they're going to have to get to the point of where's the evidence, and we're going to have that out on the front lawn very quickly, very soon. And then we can determine what the rules of engagement are. It's something we have to ask ourselves right now. But I think what I'll present to you, but I've got an interesting thesis I'm going to throw at you here just after the pause here. Listen, let me just remind folks here, you're listening to Malcolm and Michael Johns here on Viewpoint Presents. We're thrilled always to have you with us, and thank you for being here with us. This 2 hours we do a Viewpoint is the fastest growing news magazine. I'm confident of that in our country. You'll hear both hours are tremendous, incredible. Always thrilled to have Michael here. One of the best conservative voices. You're heard up front. A lot of the great conservative voices we pull in from around the nation that changes week to week. So 2 great hours again, 10 to noontime. Again, please join me on America Out Loud Talk Radio, of course, and hear the Viewpoint brand 10 to noon, 6 to 8 later in the day. And everything, as always, on our network goes to podcast very much. So just after around 2 or so in the afternoon, Sunday, all of this stuff is available on demand. And that's, that's the convenience we like today, to be able to take it with us. In fact, over 70% of people, believe it or not, listen to talk radio and podcast and all of this stuff on their smartphones and tablets. It's just the way we are today. We're on the run. And unless they have us locked down mode with a mask on somewhere in a corner, if the left has their way, right? Not to be. I'm not going to be locked down in no corner there. Anyways, I hope you won't either, but that's the program here. Well, we'll pause right now. We'll be back with you in just a moment, and we'll continue on with Michael Johns.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
My fellow Americans, our mission here at AmericaOutLoud.com is clear. We're here to defend our founding values and principles at a moment when they are under unprecedented assault, and to cover the news objectively and offer intelligent commentary on the challenges we face as a nation. You can tune in and join our family of listeners 24/7 in this vital crusade. Our apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find us on iHeartRadio or our world-class media player. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Join you back here on Viewpoint here. It's Malcolm along with Michael Johns. And, we're talking about the race as a big, my big elevator speech, Michael, is that there's no way when you look at all the evidence and all the facts and all the data that President Trump lost this race. The problem, the challenge for the right and the challenge for patriots, really, is that the full-on assault of the media, which started with all the pollsters, it started with all the media highlights, it started back earlier in the year, around March, April this year, after the COVID thing hit and the election, the strange election that it was, started. And it never really did catch on because Biden never really came out. He stayed underneath in his home or basement or whatever, wherever he was, they call it here. And he never answered questions and they never did the usual. So we all kind of scratched our head come October, November, and we thought, well, this really doesn't feel like a presidential race, because it never really did. Now what's happened is now that they had all this setup, Michael, I mean, here's my thesis with this whole thing. Now they had their setup here and they played it the way they played it here. And, you know, all the evidence, then, you know, now they worked it real hard with the media and the posters and all of the data. And then they said, well, he's not going to win. He's clearly not going to win. And they get to the other side now. Now they're doing the same thing. And the reason the media went immediately to the mode of President-elect Biden was because they figured if they could throw as much onto this, onto the, you know, the program here, put as much out there in the daylight as they possibly can, then there's no way, Michael, when you say, well, what are we going to do if, well, what they've done is they've made it, well, you can't say that, Michael, because we've already made him, it's a declarative point that he's already president-elect, and what you say about the evidence now really doesn't matter, because we have a way of doing things in our history and the way we elect presidents, and so you don't have anything to say about it, Michael, and you and the American people have nothing to say about it. That's the way it is. So now they're on the other side of the election, and what I see is that's what they're doing now. This is just the full-on assault of the entire program, buddy.
But I've been at this, you want to know something? I don't want to sound arrogant, but I've been at this a lot longer before anyone knew what Twitter or Facebook were, before those things even existed.
No doubt.
And my track record is a pretty impeccable one. I think most people who have been listening to my voice would say, you know, yes, he's conservative. Yes, he's a Republican, but he's straight up. And I am not about misrepresenting facts. Amen. And I guarantee you, Malcolm, if I felt this race were over, and that Biden had won a free and fair election, I would be telling and encouraging people to get on with things that we have bigger and future battles to fight and not to waste time on that. That is not my position. I believe, as you believe, I think we've come to the same conclusion through different roads, that there are a lot of issues here that require major investigation, major legal action. I'm very comfortable with the legal steps that are being taken for the most part. I am not comfortable with what's being done on Dominion and Smartmatic, which I think represent extraordinary risks, not just in the present tense, but in the future tense if we don't get to the bottom of it. And, you know, as far as Biden being in his basement, You've provided, I think, a lot of anecdotal suggestions of the fraud, but add that one to it. You know, if they come to him and say, hey, look, don't worry, we got a way to make these votes come together in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona. If they're tight, if they're not tight, we won't use them. If they are tight, we will use them.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, do you feel much of a burden to get out and win the hearts and minds of American people? Or maybe do you sort of say, you know, there's more risk involved with me getting out and speaking, and I don't really feel up to it anyway. I'll just sort of sit in here in my basement. All of a sudden that strategy, which seems so baffling to so many Americans, starts to make a little more sense.
Well, let me tell you something with what you just said. And here's a development for you, an aha moment, which you don't know, but I'll tell you now. What's really cool with listeners as we're talking here, so you're hearing right now with what Michael just put out there, and I love what he just said, and I'll say confidently, you are listening to one of, I think, the premier conservative voices in our nation, and here's what's really cool. You heard from one of the other premier conservative voices in the first hour, and now here it is in the second hour with Michael. You got think about this, people. Two of the very top elite voices in the country right here on Viewpoint. Who was in the first hour? Well, none other than Dinesh D'Souza. Who's in the second hour? Michael Johns. Now, that should tell you plenty, but that's what I was talking about at the end of the program and this news magazine and what we're trying to do in delivering the out loud truth, Michael, and why it matters. And what I also like, you just hit the same point Dinesh said, which is why I bring that up, okay, in the same capacity and the way that you did, because he would say the same thing that you said the same thing, and quite frankly, I would say the same thing, which is this. If Joe Biden won fair and square, if that is the will of the American people, we are cool with that. I'm cool with that. If that's what they want, if that is legit, and that's really what this country wants, who the hell am I to step in the way? Okay.
Right.
I mean, that's the way I see it, buddy. Okay. Right. What do you say to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, politically, if that were overwhelmingly and convincingly true, I'm quite confident that the policy prescriptions he's laying out, if he executes on them, which he appears to be willing to do are going to be complete failures and going to alienate the electorate, and we will find a way to fight back. And I have led that fight back before, and I'm prepared to do it again. And there's a lot of other good American patriots and competent ones that who would, I'm sure, join in doing that. I don't want to have to do that if it's not necessary, and I don't want to see American democracy undermined by half of the country, I think very credibly, coming to the conclusion that this was not a free and fair election. That needs to be resolved. Now, the bigger question, which we haven't addressed, is who's going to resolve that? Because you logically turn to your DOJ and FBI to do that. The neutral arbiters of legality who have undermined their credibility over these last 4 or 5 years. And that, too, is troubling. You can see how these pinnacles, these structure of American freedom, liberty, and democracy have been attacked and undermined because their credibility has been attacked and undermined because of the things they have done. We have put bad people in positions of authority, and they have done bad, predictably done bad things. That has eroded the American people's confidence. And we have major challenges right now. The first and foremost is you believe, and I tend to believe as well, Donald Trump won this election. That needs to be not just opinion, but demonstrated, which means facts, and facts the courts are going to acknowledge and accept. We also have to repair the image of process and procedure in this country so that American people don't give up on the system that we spent so much blood, time, treasure.
You know, Michael, I did a whole program during the week with listeners on the Voice of the Nation about our crazy election systems and the fact that we pretend or we profess to be the United States of America, and then we throw it all to the wind by having all these crazy community Marxist mayors, governors, and others offset, and everybody has a different set of rules, which you can't possibly follow them all because you get all these crazy rules out there, and we're supposed to have one. One thing, Michael, if we had 50 presidents, I could see that. But we only got one, Michael. Come on. What are we doing here?
Yeah, we don't have a proportionate democracy, which means it's an all or nothing. Every one of these elections is all or nothing. You got one mayor, you got one state senator, one state representative, one governor. On these Senate races, you got a winner and a loser. House races, same thing, and president races, same thing. So, you got a large percentage of the American people who went out and voted for Donald Trump who could end up having zero voice and actually having a government that goes in the complete opposite direction.
Of the will of the people.
I think it's think about the risks involved in having over, just about 73 million voting Americans see their country go in the complete opposite direction of how they voted. It is problematic. And it's nothing unconstitutional in us continuing to look at how to perfect this system, because I would like to see the American people feel that their votes and that the candidates they selected, when they perform really well, as Donald Trump did, however this turns out, have a voice in that next government.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Would you take a few minutes for us right now? And I'm thinking here, I know you've done a lot of background work on this, I'm pretty certain. And I'm speaking right now, which a lot of people are not is informed on this, but the Dominion voting system and the controversies around that. Can you take a few minutes and enlighten folks about that, please?
Right. So Dominion is, firstly, it's not a U.S.-based company. It is a company that is based in Canada. It has very strong ties to the Democrat Party. Its lobbyist, which is affiliated with one of the larger lobbying firms, is a former chief of staff to Nancy Pelosi. And Dianne Feinstein's husband, the Democrat from California, is one of the larger shareholders in that company. The firm that they selected is one known for navigating Democrat machines to obtain legislative and regulatory victories for their clients. And importantly, this system, when it was presented to various states, most of which were adopted very rapidly because of coronavirus and because of a demand for these systems, were not really sufficiently tested. Texas, however, did a very thorough assessment of this system and rejected it, saying it's completely vulnerable to manipulation and to hacking. And there's a great memo written from Texas state government officials detailing why it's a deficient system. And then, of course, on election day, in numerous states, Michigan, Georgia, they reported glitches, but they didn't report the glitches. I want to emphasize that we uncovered the glitches. And by we, I don't mean the Republican Party. I mean, we conservative activists around this country monitoring that election saw these numbers move, yep, confronted them with it. Then they labeled them glitches. Then when we began to suggest earlier this week that that was suggestive of a broader technical problem that required a thorough assessment of Dominion systems, which they have about a third market share in this country of these systems. Mm-hmm. They're in 20-some states. Then they backpedaled on that line and said, well, no, it was actually human error, which of course raises another question. What kind of human error is, you know, what kind of system is prone to human error? I mean, that's the whole idea of the system, is it's supposed to take the human dimension out of it, mm-hmm, so that you don't have someone who has partisan objectives in there manipulating it. But this has tons of deficiencies. There are paper jams that need to be unlocked that require the opening of the system, which you wouldn't typically do. There were issues the night before the election on Monday night that where they were doing last minute software updates, which in the eyes, and I'm not even talking about partisan people here, people that have worked polls for a long time say is absolutely unprecedented. You never update software that late in the process. And then, of course, you know, importantly, all of these votes that were wrongly tabulated broke just in Biden's direction, never in Trump's direction, and only in swing states, not in non-swing states, and only by this Dominion, not by other systems. Now, that was enough, but this is what's new for me in the last 24 hours,
all right,
Malcolm, yeah, is I've dug into this a little bit. Okay. Others are as well. And they have a subsidiary that is a company called Smartmatic that was developed by three Venezuelans and has been utilized throughout the world. It was this system was the sole basis under which Chavez manipulated the Venezuelan elections. So they have a subsidiary that they have utilized specifically for the purposes of fraudulently manipulating foreign elections, meaning the people that came together to form this company did so because they saw the opportunity for a market that could be created. And this company's gone on to be quite big, and they have a formal relationship with Dominion. I believe that all of this adds up to a basis for everyone of these Dominion votes to be analyzed and carefully audited and recounted in whatever ways make most sense. But we cannot take the outcome of these as given or credible at this point.
Wow, that is something else. I heard about the Venezuelan connection to that. You know, I'm hearing a lot of drip, drip, drips about the Dominion system. I mean, I knew you took a really hard look at it. But what you say there is very important in that we can't take any of this for granted. I mean, what's wrong with saying this has to be looked at? It is screaming in our faces to take a look at this entire system and everything that you just laid out there. If you combine that, Michael, with what I laid out in the first chapter of this program, now you've got two major causes here as to why this election clearly doesn't pass the smell test, right?
No right. Way. And you know, we've talked about China a bit, and this is not.
Yeah, how do you think their hand is in there? Do you think they have a hand in here,
all right,
China?
Well, here's how it's in. So this was what I raised this on OWN last week because I think it's important.
Okay.
And I'm going to say two things. Number one, China has manipulated some of the most carefully guarded pieces of information through cyber hacks in our country, period. Everyone knows very recently they hacked Equifax, the credit reporting agency, ostensibly to identify individuals who may be facing financial hardship or otherwise that could be compromised or recruited or utilized for the purposes of their very vast and complex and efficient intel agencies. And further back, they hacked, this is incredible, they hacked and obtained all of the FBI clearance files on U.S. government employees, including my own. So information that many of us haven't even been able to see is in the hands of China's Communist Party. That was done under Obama when they weren't sufficiently protecting it. But let me just say, this was the Presidential Personnel Office and Equifax, a major company. Both were acutely aware that the data that they were holding and housing was immensely valuable, and that there was a lot of information that needed to be carefully protected and guarded. That alone, that sentiment alone, and all the resources they put into protecting that data was never enough to protect that data from Chinese Communist Party. Now we have Dominion, which has no history of utilization in this country, who had been reviewed, whose systems had been reviewed by Texas authorities and deemed utterly inadequate and insufficient from the standpoint of its security, who now turns out to have a subsidiary that's been directly involved in electoral fraud. You add all this up and you say, who could potentially have manipulated those elections? China, yes. Biden campaign, yes. Big donors affiliated with Biden, yes. Democrat institutional operatives, yes. There's a lot of forces that had a lot of stake in this election. I mean, and you look at the first steps that are being taken or proposed to be taken by the Biden administration back into the Paris Agreement, which is going to be a complete redistribution of wealth. Many people are going to be made very rich. Yep, we're going to pretty much go back in this Iran agreement, start trading with Iran again, enriching them so that they can in turn turn their resources, their financial resources, into support for terrorist engagement and their nuclear weapons development program. That agreement was flawed to the core. We weren't even allowed to inspect their military sites, which were the logical place where nuclear weapons development would occur. We were required to give them almost a month's worth of advance notice before arriving. It was all designed as an insufficient agreement.
Let me touch on that a little bit with you. The Iran and China component, China, Iran, even Russia for that matter. Let's talk a minute about what these countries are thinking right now. I'm guessing that just like in our country, everybody is waiting, as I suggested, for the next shoe to drop. They're wondering, what does Trump do next? They could see his quietness in the last many days since the election. Of course, Friday afternoon, he had that brief COVID thing, didn't take any questions. And he was definitely a bit removed from the gathering. You could see that. And I talked about that up front in the program the other hour. But I'm suggesting with these other countries like Iran and a lot of these adversaries we have, China, Russia, others, what do you think they're thinking right now, Michael, with this other shoe to drop with Trump and waiting to see this election? Because I think they know, or I think they think, that it's not over. They are waiting for something to happen with Trump. Do you think that's the case? I think it is.
Yeah, I think so. I think they openly cheered for Biden throughout the whole campaign. They obviously, it's exact policies that they want in both of these tyrannical governments are the ones being offered by Biden. They're very hopeful that he will emerge victorious, but they have seen that there are, real strong forces on our side and that we're fairly relentless. So I think they're, again, they're like kind of looking at the clock and hoping it can tick down to this, you know, beginning of the Electoral College vote on December, it starts on December 14th, and not have the, you know, and see these states certified before we're able to uncover a lot of these things, which gets back to what you and I were talking about the timing of all this thing. Can we realistically uncover the technical so-called glitches, and whether they were just glitches or symbolic or representative of something else? Don't know if that's realistic to accomplish here in a few weeks, but we have to have a method in place to go do that. Absolutely essential. Right. And it's probably going to require, you know, courts to sign off on it, which is never easy.
And, you know, I can't believe you brought that up in the way that you did, because I was thinking exactly the same thing in past days, Michael, because of the hour, the game clock is moving. The game clock continues to move. We know the electors. We know December 14th is a very important date. We know, and then January 20th, there's no turning back. Unless we have a new set of rules, unless we have a pause as a nation. But Michael, in order to do that, we would have to have some sort of an agreement across the board, and there would have to be a widespread thing shown. And I still think the left and the media and all would still scream and kick and yell at the mountaintops, wouldn't they? They wouldn't succumb, would they? To the
truth. You never want to be in the situation of having to resolve these things. Yeah. Retroactively, a lot of these are things that we were warning about it. Everybody was warning about it, who was close to it. You know, I'm not terribly satisfied with the way the Republican Party particularly has handled this. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're outboasting that they had contact with over 100 million voters. I heard from these guys directly, and the poll watching and the process clearly were filled with glitches. I mean, why would we not have anticipated precisely this problem in Philadelphia and Detroit, which have a decades long history of doing exactly this sort of thing when there's less at stake than there was in this election? They've done this to get city councilmen elected, much less a president of the United States. So that's immensely troubling to me. I think you said this earlier, in the week too, Malcolm, that we need to rely on whistleblowers at this time as well. And, you know, the rewards for whistleblowers should be upped considerably. It's too much at stake. If you have knowledge, regardless of your party affiliation, regardless of your ideology, if American democracy was compromised, if laws were violated, or if you witnessed fraud, you know, we need you to stand up for America right now, you know, and those people need to be completely protected against legal prosecution, and they need to be financially rewarded for their willingness to do this. There's too much at stake. Yeah, that's an important part of this process. Yeah. And we need the technical expertise to dive into this Dominion and Smartmatic component of this, which is extraordinarily troubling. And every one of these defeats that happens in local courts, where we're probably going to lose a lot because a lot of these are, you know, literally judges who ran as Democrats or were appointed by Democrats, you know, need to be appealed. And we need to, you know, take a fresh look.
Which takes time.
And just the anecdotes of this stuff are just over the top. I mean, it almost gets, I think if you acknowledge, you know, here's Nevada today comes out. Here's the guy who went out, signed 8 different ballot envelopes in the mail-in battle out there, just put our, you know, names on it and signed them, submitted them. All of them were accepted. Listen to this statistic in Georgia. 2018, 230,000 absentee ballots, 3.5% of those were rejected. In 2020, 1.2 million and 0.3% were rejected.
Wow.
This signature issue was never enforced. I don't know of a voter, I would love to hear from one, who went to vote or went to submit an absentee ballot and said, sorry, your signature doesn't match, we're not accepting your vote. It's put in there as just kind of a suggestion that we're actually scrutinizing these when we're not. And this Nevada case, you know, clearly demonstrates that. There's a great article in the Las Vegas Review Journal today by a guy named Victor Jocks, who actually, you know, went out and submitted this, including for one vote for a woman named Rosemarie Hartle, who died in 2017, accepted. I did put forward the idea this week in these rallies that we're conducting that it's important that we read the obituaries of those who voted for Biden. Because I think we need to drive home with the American people, however this works out. Yeah. That, come on, I mean, we can't have dead people vote in the elections. Dead people vote in this election. That's indisputable. People voted in the election, don't live in the state. And these cases need to be highlighted.
Absolutely. Because
we're being told by the Brennan Center, we're being told by Twitter, who relies on the Brennan Center for all their information, that there literally is no voter fraud. Like, if they were saying, hey, look, there's been some cases, there's been some problems, there's clearly some issues in 2020, but it's not as broad as conservatives are saying, that would be, I think, a much more credible position. But their position, as you clearly have seen, as probably every listener of our show has seen, is that there literally is zero, none. No fraud, not now, not ever. It's never existed.
What I also think is out of control is all of the social media giants, all the tech giants, actually. And they were very convinced, you know, we've seen all the tapes and the videos, Michael. We know that after the 2016 race, the Googles, the Twitters, the Facebooks, and the others came out. And you can go back and look at those statements. This is all fact. And they made a declarative statement that they didn't do enough to stop the election of Donald Trump. I mean, they came out and said that, those tech giants did, after 2016. Now, like, they were going to put their hand on the scale somehow. We all sort of looked at each other and said, well, what does that really mean? Well, you know what? Now we know what that really means in 2020. Now we know.
No, I think you and I, though, we knew what it meant. We knew it meant they were going to put their hands on the scale as they promised.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're still sitting here somehow surprised that they did exactly that.
Yeah.
You know, I can't even put out a tweet referencing in vague ways voter fraud, or even saying that I can't even say that I discussed voter fraud.
Last thought here. Let's try to get a call in or a mention. Let's try to get to the lieutenant governor's office. Tell him we are celebrating him, first of all, Michael, and talking about it on air. I talked about it this week on The Voice of a Nation. I'm talking about it to you today. I do think he should know that. And I love what you just said. And the reason for that, my friends, is we want to have always a call to action at the end of these shows. And Michael's always believes in that as well. We want a call to action here. And so the action is, let's talk more about that this week here. Now, throughout the week, I want to talk about that call to action, what Michael suggests there. We'll regroup with him on that. And also a lot of this funny business with the hardcore. I still quite fascinated with the Dominion relationships of those Dominion systems and what took place there is quite fascinating. Anyways, we gave you a lot to think about today, a lot of food for thought as you wrestle with all of this, people. Listen, every voice matters. It matters that we stand up for what is truly, not just our liberty and freedoms, but of course, the rule of law, the difference between right and wrong. And, we just want what is right to be right and not what is not to be wrong, what is right. That's not too hard to ask now, is it, my fellow Americans? I don't think so. Thank you again for being on the mission here. Again, stay with us, get behind it. We're driving a big conversation here on America Out Loud, and we thank you, as always, for being part of the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.